Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and it is a gift for us from God Almighty, another day of life, another day to pursue trying to serve others in the ways that we can, and of course, to bring ourselves closer to God. It's my view. It's not a religious show because I'm not qualified to preach, and it's a political show. Everybody's welcome. And atheist, Jew, Muslim, we align around politics, conservative view of the world. It's been a while since I've described my philosophy. My philosophy is this. I'm a small government, big person person. The bigger the government, the smaller the human being. And I don't mean in physical size, obviously. It's not being crushed down physically. But it's the meaning of what it is to be human is erased if you accept huge, huge government. Speaking of huge, huge government, it's been a morning where I have gone through and now defended my views on the two major scandals of this era of the big lie. And we do live in the era of the big lie. Massive propaganda. And I've been going through from the very first hour defending my view that not only would Democrats steal, they're pro-crime. If you look at the cities that they own, they're pro-criminal, they're pro-crime, they're perfectly comfortable seeing cities burn to the ground. They're not particularly bothered by domestic terror organizations committing political murders on the streets. Two political murders in this past year by Antifa on the street, at least two, because there's murders of police officers, which are easily tied to Black Lives Matter Incorporated. There's attempted murders of police officers, easily tied to Black Lives Matter Incorporated, which is a domestic terror organization that is taking black lives. It takes more black lives than cops do, in my estimation. I think numbers bear that out. They're not particularly bothered by that. Therefore, they're not bothered by crime if the crime helps them. You know, in states like Oregon, where Antifa runs the legislative agenda of the Oregon Speaker of the House. I mean, that stands to reason. The legislative director of the Democrat Oregon Speaker of the House is herself Antifa. Andy Ngo has reported that she has been arrested at Antifa rallies, or pardon me, riots, and has said, yeah, I'm Antifa. Andy Ngo's reported that, right? So that's pro-domestic terror, if it helps them. They're perfectly fine with kids in massive experiments, right? They're perfectly fine giving organizations permission to teach your 4 and 5 year olds that it's fun to masturbate. They want that taught in the schools. They'll do that just to change society, just to mold it into what they want it to be. They'll do that to kids. I don't know that there's anything they'd stop at. Therefore, I have absolutely no problem believing that they cheated and stole this election with fraud. We know that the big social media companies are using technology to squelch conservative voices, to squelch news. I noticed after the election, all of a sudden, my Twitter engagement rates are right back up where they were. Look at that. Once again, I very commonly get 400 retweets or 1,000 likes on things. During the election, I was lucky to get 100. So we know they'll use technology to their advantage in dishonest ways. We know this. We know that they try to hide fraud. We know we've watched them do that in Washington State and others. We know that the systems are hackable. So that's on the election front. On the COVID front, I've said that I believe this is the biggest global lie in history. I do believe that. And my evidence for this goes to the coordination of messaging. All of a sudden, the world switched from talking about deaths to cases, cases, cases. And by the way, interesting thing about cases, 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 it's become a meaningless word. But what if there is more coordination? What if it's getting down now to the absolute tactics of tyranny? Mark Stein has said that tyranny is always capricious. Something caught my eye when I was listening to what's going on in Australia and Britain. there was something that caught my eye because it sounded a whole lot like something Jay Inslee would say. And normally there'd be a Seattle spirit right here in my computer system that I would... Did you put that on the air? That was a... Oh, Alex just literally in my ear just did a Homer Simpson. Did you mean to sound like Homer just there?
No.
No, I swear to you, I wish that was recorded because you just, I said that and then I hear this, don't! You literally homered. So do you have that Seattle spirit? Could you play that for the people?
I suppose, Todd, yeah. I could whip out a Seattle spirit.
All right, here it is. Seattle spirit from Alex Overall. As soon as he gets to the play button. Don't!
Oh, yeah. This is great. You know, this is real radio right here, Todd.
Yes, it is. Just like in high school radio.
And the president's lies about our voting system are just that, and they're unacceptable, and they should not stand. Washington State is a beacon of light in this regard because we have demonstrated to the country that an open, accessible, efficient, legitimate all-mail ballot works.
So, I hope we're going to get to this James O'Keefe thing. I think Alex is checking that audio to make sure there's no cursing in it. Incredible. Been monitoring the CNN calls. That's coming up, I promise. Do you remember, if you heard me fill in for Rush and you're not in the Western Washington area, you know, we were talking to someone who listens to the show in Florida the other day. You may have heard me on Rush's show talk about Jay Inslee's ridiculous rules.
What we know is that restaurants that serve substantial appetizers are safe completely from the Walking Dead disease. Which is the most deadly virus that the world's ever seen. And there's no scientific debate on that. That's not debatable. So you can stay open at your bar or your restaurant until we're going to lift that now from 10:01 p.m. to we're going to take that up to 10:03 p.m. because you've done what you're told. You know, you put on the woke mask. But we just have to make sure that the bars are serving, you know, substantial appetizers.
That was a rule. Substantial appetizers. That made you safe. I cannot believe my eyes when I'm doing show prep and I listen to Katie Hopkins. Some people think Katie's nuts. Some people think she's a loon. I don't know. I don't know Katie. I know that she's been right about a lot of stuff. I know that she's called out the lockdowns and what were going to happen. I know she said they're going to be arresting you in your homes and they're arresting people in their homes. I know she said that they're going to arrest pub owners for being open. They're arresting pub owners for being open. I know that she's called out a lot of this stuff that has been insane. Then I heard her mention something that just made me go, wait, it's not just Build Back Better that they're aligned on? It's not just pretend the lockdowns work. It's not just pretend the masks work. It's not just shame people for going to Thanksgiving dinner. It's not give them a small reward of, well, you can have six family members in your house, but seven is just, you kill everybody. No. A phrase stood out to me.
Families will be allowed to meet at Christmas, government confirms. Did you ever imagine you would live in a time when the government gets to tell you what you can do inside your own homes? So they're making up crazy rules just because they can. And you've got to ask yourself each time you hear a rule, how does this stop COVID exactly, right? This one, shisha bars can remain open, but they're not allowed to sell shisha. I guess if you think about it, it's a bit like saying hairdressers can open, but they're not allowed to cut hair. Pubs, bars and restaurants, you're allowed to sell alcohol as long as somebody like me has ordered a substantial meal. Substantial, people. Then you're allowed to have a cheeky glass of wine, but not if you have ordered a packet of crisps or...
That has made it across the pond. It is impossible that there is any data backing up substantial appetizers protect you from the COVID. But it has made it from Jay Inslee's lie hole to the lie holes of the people destroying Britain. But there's no coordination. Even on their capriciousness is now coordinated. I know the tyranny's coordinated, but now they're coordinating. I could see the meeting. Right, Governor Inslee, you had something that really drove the bitter clingers nuts over there. We heard about it. It's something about, you said, substantial meals. Well, actually, what we say over here and the rubes, oh, that just drives them crazy. We call it substantial appetizers. Right, okay, appetizers. We'll go with that. Yes, we'll go with that. But it's not coordinated. Don't anybody think there's coordination of the capriciousness. James O'Keefe with Project Veritas has been spying on the senior editorial calls of CNN. I wonder what he found out. We'll tell you in about 60 seconds after a quick glance at traffic. So James O'Keefe, I'm sitting here minding my business doing a radio show. And I see this from Benny Johnson, Turning Point USA, and I think he's at OANN. Breaking, Project Veritas, James O'Keefe just recorded and live streamed President Jeff Zucker's, not President of the United States, CNN President Jeff Zucker's 9 a.m. editorial call with CNN senior leadership. here is James O'Keefe alerting Zucker to the fact that he is on the call. Alex Roldan.
You're unmuted.
Hey, Jeff Zucker, are you there? Hey, yes. This is James O'Keefe. We've been listening to your CNN calls for basically 2 months, recording everything. Just wanted to ask you some questions if you have a minute. Do you still feel you're the most trusted name in news? Because I have to say, from what I've been hearing on these phone calls, I don't know about that. I mean, we got a lot of recordings that indicate you're not really that independent of a journalist.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. So everybody, in light of that, I think what we'll do is we'll set up a new system, and we'll be back with you. We'll do the rest of the call a little bit later.
We're going to release those recordings today at 7 o'clock. So stay tuned. It's going to be fun.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. So you just heard me talk to.
No, keep it going. Keep it going. That's all you got. Oh, this has been this. Gosh bless James O'Keefe for doing this. CNN is not a news company. And if you don't trust me on that, how about Tom Bevin, who was one of the co-founders and CEO of Real Clear Politics? This is absolutely fair game, right, for James O'Keefe to do this with CNN. Look, I said on Rush's show, and people got very upset about this, at CNN. This is where Oliver Darcy got very, very, very angry. And little Brian Stelter wrote a just very little angry little piece, because they put it in scare quotes that Todd Herman, filling in for Rush Limbaugh, said that CNN colluded with the Democrats. Yeah. Yeah, it's collusion. That's exactly what it is. And so it's fair game to turn and ask these questions because of the dynamics that we have watched over these past 4 years unfold. It is, in fact, time to label CNN what CNN is, which is an arm of the revolution. They know what they're pushing. They know exactly what they're doing when they say, for instance, we didn't get to this earlier, and I think it's very important. For instance, there's now yet another study on hydroxychloroquine. This is, to me, the most CNN thing of all CNN things. This is, to me, the power of the media explained. Let me go at it this way. There's now, I'll get to the hydroxychloroquine, I promise. There is now yet another indicator that the COVID flu was in the United States in December of last year, December of 2019. This is from blood tests, so it's not even questionable. They went back and looked at archived blood samples and they were scanning it for COVID antibodies. As early as they found so far was December of 19. Do you remember the bad flu season? There was a bad flu season. 2 years ago, 810,000 people were hospitalized. I think last year it was 500 to 600,000 people hospitalized from the flu. Remember that? We've talked about this in the show. Here's the power of the media. The COVID flu is in the United States from December to March. No one panicked. The hospitals weren't at risk. The system wasn't going to fall apart. There was no need to mask, which doesn't work anyway. There was no need to social distance, of which there's no evidence. In fact, it doesn't work. I shared the Armed Forces study with you, the Marines who had to go through all the masking and social distancing and cleansing and cleaning protocols. It didn't work. They got more COVID than the people who didn't do that. It doesn't work, social distancing. No one panicked. And then all of a sudden, CNN and others said panic, and people panicked. All of a sudden, the ridiculous so-called governor of Ohio was the first to order a lockdown, and people panicked. We have higher suicides. We have higher deaths from despair. We have kids in mental health crisis at record numbers across the globe because CNN said panic. Likewise, with hydroxychloroquine, there is no pre-existing medical controversy about hydroxychloroquine. None. It's not a controversial drug. Never has been. The one instance where you could say it killed people, they were overdosed. They pretended to test COVID-19 or hydroxychloroquine. They tested it on people who were deathly ill. That's not where hydroxychloroquine works. And they overdosed it by five times as much of the drug as people should get at once with very sick people, and they had heart attacks. There is now another study, peer-reviewed, rigorous, that shows early intervention with hydroxychloroquine reduces hospitalization and fatality rates. I think the hospitalization rate is reduced by like 77%. They did a side-by-side, blind study. People in early stages of COVID, some people got hydroxy, some people did not. The group that got hydroxy had dramatically better health outcomes. Because one of the arguments against a hydroxy test had been, well, these are people who aren't that sick. Okay, so most people recover. Well, they did a side-by-side. More people with hydroxy recover. This is a guy named Dr. Peter McCullough, talking to Senator Ron Johnson about hydroxychloroquine. As you hear this, remember that CNN, on whom James O'Keefe has been spying, CNN probably got people killed by deciding to make hydroxychloroquine controversial because Orange Man bad. That was CNN's invention as one of the actors in the revolution.
And the New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet acknowledged that they were fraudulent papers. They were scare papers to scare people on hydroxychloroquine. Since that time, there's been dozens of pile-on scare tactics in academics. This isn't the government. This is people in my field, in academic medicine, who are committing academic fraud. I reviewed a paper. I'm a cardiologist. I reviewed a paper that made it into the medical literature demonstrating that hydroxychloroquine causes a heart attack, that hydroxychloroquine causes a giant scar in the heart. And I can tell you, I'm at Baylor in Dallas. We have the world's most recognized cardiac pathology program in the world. Our senior examiner has held in his hands more human hearts than anybody in the history of mankind. I can tell you firsthand, hydroxychloroquine does not cause giant scars in the heart. So academic medicine is committing fraud. Is committing, I think, a crime against humanity. There must be a motivation behind this that's much bigger than just Democrat versus Republican.
You think? Oh, wait. Sorry, I crossed the line. Dr. Peter McCullough, in a Senate hearing, Baylor University put his name on that statement. Do you think that should be news? Oh, incidentally, tomorrow we'll talk about the news out of India. That's one of the early adopters, one of the test subjects of one of the vaccines. I think it's, is it CoviPass? CoviShield. A CoviShield test has a neurological injury that lab confirms tied to the vaccine. The vaccine company's suing him back. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Let's check traffic with Right Way Traffic.
It's your turn to text the Todd Herman Show.
The rule's pretty simple.
Be concise, be precise, and drop the mic. 800-465-8770.
And give yourself a nickname if you're using the text line, please. You only have to do it once. Alex will handle the details from there on out to the text line. Day two of me trying to be sensitive to Republicans and conservatives who are saying, that's it, Trump lost, move on. And I believe, again, today, I think I've made my case in a different way on why I feel very secure in my position that there's far, far too many signs of fraud, opportunity, the environment, what Democrats are. They're pro-crime. They have no problem with crime if it helps them. They've been criminals during this election. They've sponsored and winked at and frankly, helped fund and promote two domestic terror organizations. They have no qualms about breaking the law to get what they want. None whatsoever. And about hiding fraud and using fraud, then the signs of fraud, etc. I've been through that. So I made the case that I am not moving on. I demand a hearing in the Supreme Court because I love my country. And if we don't have a transparent hearing on this, this country is over. Maybe not this year, maybe not 4 years from now. But it can't be rescued when people do not trust their votes. It can't. It cannot. So the only form of rescue would be absolute election reform, which the Democrats, who are pro-fraud, will fight tooth and nail. They won't even agree that we need to make sure that only citizens vote. They won't even agree on that. They're pro-fraud. So lots of people agree with that position. Dog mom, these conservatives that say Trump lost, move on, drive me crazy. I'm glad you're not one of them. I wonder how those same people would feel if a thief stole their car, caught it on video. They knew who the thief was, but the police said, well, sorry, the car's lost, move on. Well, dog mom, I don't know where you live, but that's Seattle. I mean, they just won't respond. The police can't. You call 911. Someone just drove away in my car. Okay, we're going to need you to take an Uber, fill out a form. They can't. They've been decimated in their numbers in Seattle because the Democrats in Seattle are pro-crime. They're creating an environment for criminals, not for citizens. Right? And that's again, it's self-evident. So I'm not going to move on from that. On the terms of, Crabwalker agrees. We read this yesterday, Alex, Crabwalker's support for that position. And it's a really good note. In terms of the COVID fear cult, well, someone really liked that. Vashon lady was talking about this so-called journalist in Australia. Listen, let me tell you something flat out. If you ever find yourself as a journalist parked outside of a church, hiding across the field in your car, magnifying people's faces through, you know, whatever, your camera, your phone camera, whatever, and counting people leaving a church of worship, you have become the nightmare. You have become a malevolent, malignant adjunct to a state that is crushing the freedom of conscience that makes journalism possible. Actual journalism. If you are an actual journalist, you're recording where, who, what, where, when, why, factually, right? And your conscience is what keeps you from veering over into being a propagandist. You may decide to go be an opinionist like I am, a commentator, right? Very frank about what I believe and my agenda. Very frank about it. My conscience forces me to say the things I'm saying. Well, I guess that's not true. I could filter. But my conscience is telling me I must share these truths with you while I'm allowed to do so. And hence, I do. So if you as a so-called journalist ever find yourself hiding outside of a church to destroy other people's conscience, church is not just an expression of a worship of God. It's someone's conscience. Right? Then you're not a journalist at all. And Vashon Lady said, I said about that journalist, I was trying to join her fear cult. I was making fun of her. Hilarious. Sadly, the fear cult is true, but thanks for bringing some humor to it all. Thanks, Todd. Yeah, it is. It is true. And it's been driven by media sources. I shared yesterday the guy who is the business editor for Axios, who tweeted that rage you feel when you walk by a single family home and you know they have multiple families in there for Thanksgiving. That rage? Incredible. On the topic of a gym owner back east giving advice on how to keep the business open, the Buckeye writes, Todd, in regards to the gym owner offering free legal advice, he came up with three steps to protect his business and then shared with other business owners for free. Where are the lawyers who believe in capitalism? Where are the lawyers who believe in free enterprise? Do they not participate in capitalism and free enterprise themselves? They should be the ones backing business owners and giving them free advice on how to protect their businesses. There's a lot of them, Buckeye. There's a lot of them. There's some in central Washington who have stood up and said, hey, in Ritzville or in the Tri-Cities, rather, these businesses that are staying open, we will represent you for free. So there are law firms doing this. In fact, we should have that law. Actually, we need to get that law firm on if they come on the show. Talk about that. But listen, just like there's hands-off topics that I've displayed to you that the media will not report, I'm not certain that the media is going to report that there are law firms doing this for free. Because the dogma is lockdowns work. The dogma is protect the lockdowns. The dogma is don't criticize the lockdowns. And you see this with the media, with news programmers. I saw multiple pieces today where news programmers are saying students are failing school during the pandemic. During pandemic, high records of failure with students. Students' mental health suffer during the pandemic. All of that is false. Let's go right back to where we started this hour. The COVID flu has been in the United States since at least December of 2019. That was a very bad flu season. No one panicked. The schools were not shut down. No one was told to wrap useless fabric around their beaks. No one was told that all the children will die. Consequently, no one panicked. Consequently, kids didn't fail school. Consequently, there was no spike as there is now in adolescent suicides. Because CNN and the others didn't come out and say, everybody panic. The pandemic has done nothing to those children. The massive global push to change this society completely has destroyed a generation of children. Hopefully their resilience and the will of God will help them come back from that. We'll come back and wrap up the day with a personal note next on the Todd Herman Show.
Down on Main Street.
On a personal note today, people can live through a lot. People commonly cannot live without hope. When hope is gone, life soon follows for a lot of people. There's varying degrees of toughness and resilience, varying degrees of ability to crank one more day out without hope. There's some people who are animated in such ways that they can take lack of hope and turn it into hatred or anger or mission. But hope being gone, in most cases, means life is gone. Our young people are just a microcosm of this. When I worked in the government schools, one of my jobs was as a discipline coordinator. A job I invented for myself because it needed to be done. I was to work with the toughest kids at a gang-impacted grade school. That sounds oxymoronic until I tell you the population of that school is made up of kids who were, that was the school of last resort. They had to be sued out of the district. I'm talking about kids who, yes, sixth graders were hardcore gangsters. I'm talking about a school where we had a drive-by shooting in our park, pardon me, in the playground. They drove the car through the playground and shot out the windows of the school. It was that sort of school. I had to work with these really tough kids. I put together a system of in-school suspension because I said, no, we're not going to send kids home. I know the homes of these kids. It's chaos. Some of them don't have any parents. Most of them have one, and that parent is either very busy or very criminal, right? Or having real challenges themselves, their own health, their own mental health, or their own chemical health. I put them into a classroom of sorts where they were isolated. They couldn't see the faces of other kids. They were to face the wall. For the first, depending on how old they were, it was less time for little kids. Like if it was a, you know, first grader, I very rarely had first graders in my room, but if a first grader did have to come into my room, they would have to face forward, not touch anything, no pencils, no paper for about 20 minutes. And it was really hard for first graders. If you were in sixth grade and you were hardened, you needed to spend the day with nothing to do, nothing. So that when you finally earned the privilege of having a piece of paper and a pencil, it was something you earned. And from there, I made sure that you could constantly earn more. More privilege, more freedom, until it reached a point of normalcy. But if you violated my rules, and someone was always watching, if you violated my rules, you went back to stage one. I saw tough kids, and I'm talking about gang members who've been involved in shootings, cry in my classroom. Cry. Because of the pressure of being isolated. I once gave some kids an undefinable task because I couldn't find any other way to get them to turn around. I knew they broke into our school. I knew it for a fact. Kids told me, then I saw that one of these little suspect kids had these massive cuts on his leg filled with glass. And I knew that someone had kicked in our glass sunroof. I could see the foot marks, the shoe marks. So I knew that this kid had done this. I caught them. And the only way to turn them around is I gave them an undefinable task. These were really tough kids. I brought them into the gym and I sat them down. And I said, here's the deal, guys. I want you to go get butcher paper over there from the art room. I want you to roll it out across the gym floor. So they did that, taped it down. It was entirely covered. And I said, all right, here's the deal. There's a pack of pencils and pencil sharpeners over there. You are to color that paper until it is entirely black. And then you can go home. They said, that's it. I said, that's it, guys. So they went and scribbled around the floor and they scribbled these lines. And they came back and said, we're done. I said, no, guys, I can still see white paper. And this really tough kid looked at me and went, you mean all black? Yes. That will take us all weekend. Maybe more. I haven't had dinner. That's okay. I have some brought in. I told your mom and your uncle that you're going to be here. They fell into tears because there was no hope. It was an undefinable task with no timeline and completely capricious. They knew I could find white on that paper whenever I wanted to find white. I received a note from a listener. His dear friends have lost a boy who committed suicide. He'd been a happy boy, 15, Chicago area, wasn't showing any signs, but made plans. He left behind a note to explain how he snuck into his father's guns, though they were secure. That boy's last concern among them was making the case that his father was a responsible gun owner, but the kid broke in. It's the lockdown. How do you have hope when every kid watching this knows these rules are capricious? How do you have hope when any young person can see they can lock us down forever? We must be their hope. We must lead them to God for hope. We must pray that the Holy Spirit will give them the energy to live without hope of seeing their friends in a normal setting. Part of this is our responsibility. The Great Rush Limbaugh program is next. I'll be in for Rush on Thursday. Go be well, be strong, and be kind.